That's Dr. John, right place, wrong time. No, this is the right place, and it is the right time. It's open lines, and we've got an hour more to go. I cannot believe how quickly the time is passing. Dan Galante is here, twisting the dials and the knobs, and Tom Danheiser is back on Coast to Coast, where he belongs. All is right with the universe. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. We've got people calling in from Cincinnati and Washington State and Rock Island, Illinois and Phoenix, Arizona, Long Island, New York, West Virginia, Louisville, Kentucky. We've got a full board of lines, and I will get to as many of you as I possibly can when open lines continue right here on Coast to Coast. Stay with us. All right, let's not waste any time. Let's go right back to the phones. Wildcard line, is it Leah or Leia in Cincinnati, Ohio? Good morning.
Hi, Mr. Sherritt. My name's Leah.
Hi, Leah.
Hi. I've been listening for a few years now, and I finally found the opportunity to call in for a story that I had about a doppelganger experience.
Oh, yes, the doppelganger. Okay, love to hear it. Love to hear it.
When I was 8 years old, I lived in an apartment complex, and on Wednesdays I would go to a church group, and the bus would drop me off around 8 o'clock. So around 8 o'clock or 8:30, I was walking home, and along the sidewalks, there are these pine trees that right next to the apartment buildings. I was about to turn the corner to walk into the door to go into the apartment complex, and I happened to look to my left, and right under the pine tree, like the limbs were high enough to where I could stand under them. Anyway, I looked over to my left, and I saw my six-year-old self. And I distinctly remember that she was wearing a red sweater that I actually had in my apartment, in my closet at the time. It was a red sweater with a yellow balloon stitch in it. But anyway, it was very interesting. It only lasted for a couple seconds, but that's the strangest thing that's ever happened to me. But I thought it was interesting since you were talking about doppelgangers and all that.
Yes, but you immediately recognized with a great deal of certainty that that was you at the age of six. How can you be sure?
I suppose it was probably just me saying, oh, well, it's probably what I looked like when I was 6 years old. But it was around that age. She had longer hair. She was definitely younger, but it was me. I know that much. And she was, of course, wearing the sweater that I actually had at that moment in my closet.
Right.
And I had worn that sweater when I was younger.
Okay, so you recognize that article of clothing, and this doppelganger, it vanished before your eyes?
Yeah, the interaction, I said hello to her, and then it lasted probably a fraction of a second, and then she was gone. So,
how close were you to this figure?
I suppose I was probably maybe four or five feet from her.
Oh, very, very close. Okay, very
yeah,
close.
Yeah, yeah.
Did
right under the pine tree. So,
did she look at you? Did she make eye contact?
Yeah, she never looked away or anything. She was just, when I looked over, she was there, and then she was looking at me, and I said hello, and then she disappeared.
Wow. And what has anything like that ever happened before, or
no.
since?
No, it's the strangest experience I've had, and I haven't had any other experiences. I really like listening to the show because I like listening to other people's stories about the paranormal and ghosts and all that, but I haven't had anything else happen to me.
And what have you learned since about doppelgangers? Because I mentioned earlier my lone, like you, I've had one paranormal experience. It had to do with my doppelganger hovering above me. I guess it was the night that my father was laid to rest, nearly 30 years ago. And I have since been told that when you see your doppelganger, it can be a bad omen. It can mean that your own demise is imminent. Well, I'm still here. That was 30 years ago, so I'm not sure what to make of that. But what have you learned about doppelgangers?
I looked into it after that experience throughout my life, and I have heard just the same things, you know, about how it should be a negative kind of sign. I never felt from that personal experience that it was a negative thing. It was just more of a curious kind of interaction, but I never felt any harm or, I mean, she didn't look happy or sad or anything. She's pretty neutral, but I didn't feel anything negative from it, but.
Leah, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Have a good evening. A wild card line again, and it's Layton in Washington State. Is it Layton?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can. Welcome.
Well, hi. I'm also a first-time caller and pretty excited. I heard you guys talking earlier and have a couple points. First of all, hello, Richard.
Hi there, and welcome aboard.
Yeah. I heard your experience about your doppelganger, and I had a similar experience, kind of. It was very odd. It was a dream. But I was only about 13 or 14 years old, and I was semi-trained. I just kind of was interested, but I usually lucid dream. I kind of control my dreams, I suppose. And one night, it was like I woke up, I suppose, woke up in my bed, and nobody was around. There was no one in my house. My parents were gone, and I kind of just left my house and started looking around, and everybody was gone. I remember wandering around my neighborhood, especially for almost a day, and then all of a sudden, I decided to go back to my house, and then when I walked in, the room was all full of shadows. My front door opened into my living room, and it was especially dark. There was no reason it should have been that dark. It was the middle of the day, and I saw my face kind of come out of a corner, and it pushed itself up to me, and then I jolted awake. It was very startling. I didn't quite know what to do, and that led into a little bit of sleep paralysis. I've experienced that a few times over the last few years, and I actually had a girlfriend that witnessed me in sleep paralysis for barely a second. As soon as she touched me, I seemed to wake up, and it was weird to her. I was kind of having like a seizure. I was seizing up almost like on marionette strings and very stiff and jolting around, and I couldn't breathe. It was a very odd experience.
All right. Do you have any memory of that when you were having this seizure, as you described it?
Yes, but it was very weird. I could tell I couldn't move and I couldn't talk or scream, but I kind of felt like something was on my back, which was weird because I was on my back. It was like something was standing right behind me. Mm-hmm. Holding me still. It was very weird, and I was just in a panic. I was basically having an anxiety attack. I didn't know what was going on, and very erratic. But
well, that could have been a legitimate, a real instance of sleep paralysis. I believe that sleep paralysis is an actual a condition. It does happen to people from time to time, but I do not think we can explain away all of these paranormal experiences that people have as mere sleep paralysis. But in your case, in this instance, it may have just been that. I appreciate the call, Layton, and thanks for checking in from Washington State. Now, he mentioned that he is a lucid dreamer. I've often thought, you know, I do not have that ability, and apparently this is a skill that you can develop. To lucid dream, that is, to be conscious enough within your dreams that you can actually control the dream, write the script, if you will. And I wonder, do I really want to have that skill? If I can go into my dreams and do anything I want, my word, I would cancel my subscription to Netflix. I wouldn't need television. Would I even want to wake up? If you know, there's something to be said for not being able to lucid dream. To the wild card line we go again, and Terry is in Rock Island, Illinois. Terry is gone. All right. To the wild card line we go again. Mary is in Phoenix, Arizona. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This happened a number of years ago. I was camping with two friends of mine just north of Phoenix. And it was definitely out up in the desert. It wasn't in the trees or anything. And we all took our dog. And it was just a really you know, kind of energy charged night and stuff. It was very interesting. Anyway, we got all set up and got the campfire going, and there was this little mesa right off, you know, away from the campsite, and I felt compelled to go up there, and my friend said, well, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know. I just want to go up and sit up on this mesa for a minute. And they said, well, you know, okay, whatever. So I took my dog and a flashlight, and I went and sat up on the top of this little mesa, and it was a crescent moon, so there was almost no moon. It was very dark, but it was, like I said, just really out in the middle of the desert, and you could see for about 50 miles in every direction, very panoramic, and but it was real dark. And I was up there for about, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, and just kind of sitting, being quiet, and then it just appeared. It really absolutely changed my life forever. It's hard to describe. It was like filaments of light. It was like a hairnet of light that every single living thing, every tree, every bush, every little clump of grass, all had tiny little hair-like, electricity, like hairs of light coming out, and they were all going up to the sky. And they kind of came up to a point or whatever at the center of the sky kind of thing. But, I mean, it was this incredible, like a hairnet. It was just beautiful. Everything had these electric, tiny little hair-like things coming off it. Every branch of every tree, as I said, every bush, everything that was living had all these little, you know, hair-like lines of electricity coming off it. And they were very fine. It was very like filigree. It was absolutely sensational. I mean, it was so beautiful.
It does sound beautiful. Was it like a light switch had been flipped on, or did they come on gradually?
It came on kind of gradually. It was like turning on a dimmer switch almost. As I sat there and I was just kind of quiet, I started, you know, noticing like light kind of coming up or whatever, and then it started getting more and more bright that I could see definitely, you know, all of these things revealing themselves, that they were little hair-like light things, and then it was just like this strong pulse that was coming out of everything, but they were very, very delicate. And it was just beautiful. It was like a lace covering over the whole earth. And like you could see in this whole panoramic of 50 miles around, and everything was glowing with all these little streams of light coming off it. And they were all coming up to the sky.
Did it just fade away, or did it persist?
It stayed for quite a while. And then my friends were calling me or whatever, and I was yelling at them, come up here or come up there. And they did, and they didn't see it.
They didn't see it.
They thought I was making it up, and I said, are you kidding? I'll never be the same. I'll never
They couldn't see it, but you could still see it.
I could still see it, yes.
And they could not.
They didn't.
Did your dog react in any peculiar fashion?
No, all three dogs reacted when we were setting up the camp. It was really strange. They all went in like a triangle thing, and they all dug a little tiny hole, and they sat down right in front of it in a triangle design. Each of them sat on the corner of the triangle, and they all dug a little hole, which I've never seen the dogs do that before. But they each dug a tiny, tiny little hole and sat in front of that hole around the campfire. And I just absolutely felt compelled to go up on that little mesa. They didn't. They didn't understand why I left the campfire at all. But I felt compelled to go up there. And when they came up, they did not see it. And I was describing it to them, and it was just bizarre. But
and how long ago was this?
This was actually about in 79, maybe 78. And it was just north of Phoenix. So it was, you know, right out in the desert. It wasn't high in the mountains or anything.
Okay, so this is 37, 38 years ago now.
Yeah.
Obviously that it has stuck with you. Have you done any investigating on your own to see if you could come up with an answer to this riddle?
Well, I have actually seen a couple things about it. There was an album years ago called also Zarathustra or whatever. It was like a German, and I guess it's, you know, a well-known, some kind of opera or something, a classical or something, that someone did a woodcut in like the 1700s, where it's kind of the same thing. Somebody, you know, did this woodcut, and I've seen pictures of that or whatever, prints of that, and it was, this man was looking, and all these, you know, little, whatever, lines of light were coming off all the trees and the bushes, and they were all going up to the sky. And
I
read it in one book one time, and it was called the Lines of Earth and Sky. That's how they put it.
Okay. I'm just wondering if it may be some freakish meteorological phenomena that, you know, that very few people ever witness. I don't know. That's a real head scratcher, but it sounds like it was a beautiful evening and obviously had a very
phenomenal,
profound effect on you.
It was. It was very lacy and, like I said, incredibly delicate, but everything living was connected to these lines of light. all coming off them and all going up to the sky. And it just made me feel so one with the universe, you know what I mean? Like these other people were saying, with that we're all connected. It was like, yeah, I got a segue for that.
I think you were very lucky and privileged to witness that, Mary.
I wish
I were up on that mesa seeing it with you. Thanks for the call. Wild card line once again, and Joanna is in Long Island, New York. Joanna, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you?
Hello, Rich. How are you? Can you hear me?
I'm very well. I can. Hey, your Mets beat the Yankees tonight.
I know. Yeah, but, you know, being a New Yorker, I guess there's a rivalry and stuff, but I'm happy they won. It's about time. I remember the amazing Mets of 69, and so I'm giving my age away here. Really quick, I want to say a couple of things, and then I'll go, because the people are telling such wonderful stories, and I want to hear them all, and they've been really great. The guy with the dogs, I've imagined the same thing. Why can't they get dogs to track Bigfoot? If he's really there, they would definitely smell him. And if they were afraid, they'd run. So they'd be like, oh my God, there's something here. And I have a little Bigfoot story. It's very short. We were camping with my dad, who was a place upstate called Otter Lake, and there was no one around us. And at night, my brothers insisted that there was this good gigantic thing walking around their tent at night, and they were frozen, petrified. So my one brother is saying, oh, that thing comes around again tonight, I'll go out there and hit it with a baseball bat. So the next night, my dad and I decide to take a walk with the lamp, and I hear something falling in the woods, and I say, Dad, what is that? And he was a former Marine, New York City cop. He wasn't afraid of anything. So he said, it's a wild turkey. That's what they're hearing. You're in a wild turkey.
There's your Sasquatch.
So he had me all relaxed. I wasn't afraid or anything. I said, oh, my gosh, they think it's Bigfoot. So later that night, they hear it. And my other two brothers poke my brave brother and say, go on out, Jim. You're going to hit him with the baseball bat? Go ahead out. And he's frozen there. My brave brother was frozen there. He's saying, Hail Mary, full of grace. Oh, my God, I'm heartily sorry for having offended thee.
There he is with a baseball bat doing his best impression of Ed Cranepole from the 69 Mets.
And what I'd like to say also to Yvonne, she has a great purpose ahead of her, that she has been protected in that way. There's a great thing for her to accomplish, many great things. And then also with regard to the gentlemen who say that they are atheists, I don't know how they would account for two people or three people seeing and experiencing the same thing at the same time. As I did with friends. I was with one friend. We were coming home on the subway really late at night. A gang got on our train with two stops left in Manhattan. And this huge, huge man, a huge gent of African descent, comes over and standing in between them and us. And he said, you touch these girls, you're going to have to contend with me. They were so petrified, they all ran off the train. The next stop was Lexington Avenue. The next stop was Queens Plaza on Long Island. And when the lights were flashing through the whole tunnel, you know, we couldn't see part, the train.
Joanna, excuse the interruption. I got to get you to hold on. Just stay put. Stay where you are. I will come back to you, I promise. And we'll continue this story. A late night train. Back with more of Open Lines here on Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett in for George Norrie. Hang in there. All right, welcome back. We are into the home stretch. Where has the night gone? I remember hearing as a kid, you know, when you get older, time flies. And I never really understood until now. It seems like I just sat down in this chair, and here we are nearing the close of the program. But we have time for some more great calls and some more great tales. And when we come back, we will resume our conversation with Joanna, who's calling in from Long Island, and we'll hear more about her enormous guardian angel aboard a late-night train approaching Lexington Avenue. You're listening to Coast, Richard Serrett in for George Norrie. Stay with us. All right, Joanna in Long Island, so let's quickly recap. You're on board this late-night train in New York, and a gang gets on. But there's a rather tall gentleman standing between you and the gang, and he sort of warns them off. So they get off the train, and now you're heading towards the Lexington station. And that's where we left off. Is Joanne still with us? Joanna?
Yes, hello?
All right, hi. I was just recapping, Joanna, about your story. Okay, so there's this large gentleman aboard this train, and he was protecting you from this gang, and they got off, and now you're heading in towards Lexington Station, correct?
They jumped off at Lexington Station.
Oh, they jumped off at Lexington. Okay.
The door's closed. Now the train goes under the East River into Long Island. There's no way of getting off that train. And if you try to open the doors to the side, you could hear the doors open because of the loud racket of the train. He goes back to sit in his little corner. He was wearing a construction jacket. He had his lunchbox. He had a hard hat. When you talk about that football player, the refrigerator.
Oh, yes, yes.
Very, very tall. And we thanked him, and he just nodded his head, and he looked down. The lights were flashing on and off as we were going through underneath the East River. And before we went to pull into Queens Plaza, the both of us looked there where he was sitting again, and when the lights flashed on the last time, he was gone.
There you go.
And the doors, we went to check the doors. I pulled the door was locked. The train-to-train door was locked. He could not have gotten off the train. And my friend and I sat there with tears in our eyes, and we were shaking. And we said, we were going to be on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow. And we're alive.
That gang of young hoods, they meant you harm.
They had knives. They had knives. And he stood in between them and us when they had knives.
And they saw him, obviously. They saw him.
They saw him. They saw him, so I don't know what kind of explanation the atheists would give for that. And my friend and I saw him, and my friend was an agnostic atheist at the time. Now she's a Bible Christian. And so,
Joanna,
you know,
don't you know that's merely particle entanglement?
For all 15 of us that were on that train, it was particle entanglement. Okay.
Well, that's what they would say, I suppose.
Yes. And then one last quick story is that the same thing happened to me again with two of my friends. I was going down to stay with them. They live out in the country. They live in a very old house full of antiques, things from the 1700s. We were having lunch in the dining room downstairs, my friend and I and her husband. I had heard footsteps going back and forth in the hallway upstairs while we were talking and standing in my room. And I'm like, why is her husband up in my room going through my stuff? Because there's somebody in my room going through my stuff. So she calls his name, and he comes out of the porch behind us. And it was only the three of us in the house. We heard loud boots going back and forth.
Who was going through your stuff, Joanna?
There was nobody up there. There was no one up there. The person came, whoever it was, came down the steps with loud clopping work boots, and we went over there to see if it was her husband, but he was behind us in the den. And I said, what just happened? And she said, what always happens? And the lights were going on and off at the same time. So this is something that the three of us experienced. There was somebody going into the room where I was staying, standing where my suitcase was, standing where my night table was. And she says, this happens whenever the two of us are sick. We have an old Victrola. And she said that Victrola needles appeared on their night table three nights in a row when they were both feeling sick. So it's really, I don't know what to say, you know? Very interesting.
Two words, quantum mechanics.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Have a wonderful night. I'm going to get off now so everybody else can.
Joanna, I'm so glad you hung on because that was a remarkable story, and thank you for sharing. East of the Rockies, and Carolyn is in West Virginia. Carolyn, welcome to Coast AM. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well.
I was calling because you mentioned about the money. Last year and a half, after my best friend died, her sister and I have been finding dimes everywhere. I'm talking about dimes. We'll find them doing laundry on the floor when we're cleaning. We go to work. We find them at work. She works in an office. She finds them around her desk. I work in a hospital, and I'm a nurse, and I start getting the rooms ready for the patients, and I find dimes on the floor. I find dimes in my car, and I'm not one to use money. I'm one to use a debit card everywhere I go.
Right, right.
And then one day, you know, I have $5 in coins.
Oh,
because
my.
Because they're coming out everywhere.
Have they ever just sort of seemingly dropped out of thin air?
I've never seen them drop out of thin air, but I'll pull in a parking lot, I'll open the door, and there's one laying right there.
Are these shiny dimes, new dimes, old dimes?
All different kinds.
They seem to like dimes, not nickels, not quarters, just dimes. Hmm.
They're mostly dimes and pennies, and we used to call her Jenny Penny.
Ha ha! Oh,
and
I see.
So that we see
the deceased. The deceased is Jenny Penny. Well, isn't that remarkable?
Yeah, and it's very interesting. It's like when we're going. I went through a very very difficult time with some things, with financial things, and I'd find dimes, and it almost seemed to be like a hopeful thing that, you know, everything's going to work out. It was hopeful, and it did. It worked out. And then her sister went through some difficult issues because they had a family business, and she was finding these dimes and pennies. And, of course, that has subsequently worked out as well. But I was just so curious because if somebody's written about it, it's happened to somebody else, and I was just wondering what kind of messages were they getting.
Right. Well, no, I've heard this sort of thing before, many times, actually, and this connection between the spirit world and money, coins, and in this case, pennies and dimes. Penny, Jenny, great story, Carolyn. Thank you for sharing. In West Virginia, first-time caller John is in Louisville, Kentucky. Good morning, John.
Hello, Richard. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
My father passed away last June. A little over a year ago. And as I was sitting with him on his deathbed, I pulled up a couple of old country songs that he was very fond of when I was much younger, when I was a kid. And I played them on my phone just to let him hear them. A couple hours later, he passed away. That was on a Sunday night. On Wednesday, I go to rather large coffee chain to work on the photographs for the slideshow funeral visitation. And so I pull up to the front door and get out of the car. And the second I close my car door, one of those songs came on their sound system. And this is there's not a lot of country music going on in this coffee chain, and it was just very, very strange. I walked in and told one of the girls that I know there, I said, "It's about time you had some decent music on here." She said, "You know, John, I've worked here for 3 years and I've never heard that song before."
Aha. Do you remember the song?
Yeah, it was Waylon Jennings, "You Sure Ain't Done It This Way."
And that was one of your father's favorites?
Yes.
So what do you think? He was sending you a sign.
Trying to tell me everything was going to be okay.
Is that what you felt when you heard it?
Yes. Oh, the song was on. I mean, it came on and played. I just felt that was his way of letting me know that everything was going to be okay.
Great call, John. Thank you, and I'm sorry for your loss, and I'm happy that you found comfort when you heard that song. Whatever it meant, and you know, however it happened to be playing when you came in to that coffee shop, the fact that you derived some comfort, that's just, you know, that's a good thing, no matter how you cut it. Wild card line again, Will is in the Bronx. Will, good morning.
How you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, Will. Tough loss for the Yankees tonight. Now you're 4.5 behind my Blue Jays.
All right. Well, look here. On that sleep paralysis thing, back in 1999, Art Bell had a guy on. He was an author. He did extensive research on out-of-body. And he said when you go into that sleep paralysis, that was your body going into the mode, you know, getting ready to get into getting ready to get into an out-of-body thing. And all you had to do was say, "I want to lift out," and it would happen. And I got to tell you something, it was shortly after that it happened. It got on my back. And previous to this, you know, it was something that was sort of frightening. But here's what happened. I don't know if I was dreaming at this point or not. I didn't even get to say it. I just thought it. And in this dream, I lifted up. And when I looked down at my body, it looked like that flag when the TV is getting ready to sign off. You see that flag blowing in the wind? That's what I saw, my legs and everything doing.
Like sort of undulating, undulating.
Right. And what happened was, like, you have no control. The next thing I know was in my living room going around the coffee table, and then I woke up in the room, and that was it. And I don't know if it was a dream or not, so I ain't trying to, you know, make nobody believe that. I'm just saying that's what happened, and I've never had it since. I've never had a sleep paralysis thing since to test it. But the next time it happened, I'm going to try it again.
Was that a frightening experience? I mean, I would think that would be very disconcerting, lifting out of your body and looking back down on your body.
At first, when I looked down at my body and saw that, it was a lot like a sound of wind blowing and like crackling paper or the whipping of material in the wind, right? I do remember that, but like I said, I don't know if it was a dream, you know, just like suggestive thinking about it and it happened. But as I said, you know, things like ghosts and all that stuff, that don't bother me. I'm not one of those people that frighten them, that kind of stuff. If there's somebody here from, you know, who passed away, if they're here, I want to talk to them and find out what's happening. I'm not one of those people that get frightened by stuff like that, you know? So anyway, interesting show, and if you can, get your audience to try that. All they got to say is they want to lift off. He had some interesting books. I remember reading two of them. I can't remember his name, but he was on our Bell show. If you contact him, he can probably tell you who it was.
All right, Will, I appreciate the call, and thanks for sharing that OBE with me. Lift off. We have lift off. And what do you say when you want to get back into your body? Let's see, wild card line again, and it's David in Sacramento. Hey, David. Oh, we lost David in Sacramento. Let's say hi to Adam in Las Vegas on the wild card line. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well.
I got a story question. I got my dad's uncle, his mom's brother, died very young. He was literally scared to death in South America. I guess the local legend had it that there was a late at night, you don't walk down by the water because there was apparition of a young woman that would appear. My dad, you know, I got this story from my dad that his uncle was riding through this by the water late at night one day and on his horse, and he looks back and this girl is sitting with riding with him on this horse, and I guess he was very young, he's in his 20s, and that experience completely changed his personality to the point where he entered a catatonic state and wasted away.
No, sorry, because the line is a little scratchy here, Adam. I'm trying to figure out here. Now, who was this gentleman? This was your father or your father's uncle that saw this apparition?
His uncle, his mother's brother.
So your dad's uncle. This would have been your great uncle.
Okay, my great uncle, apparently.
Okay, and who was with him at the time?
He was riding at night by himself. From point A to point B, and I guess local legend had it. He knew about it.
People right, and he saw this water. Apparition. It was on the back of his horse.
It was on the back of his horse. He looks back, and it was a woman riding on the back of his horse.
So I guess before he just sort of degenerated into this catatonic state, he was able to tell people what happened that night.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yes. Completely changed his personality. To the point where he died.
My, oh, my.
Yeah. It's a story in my family, like everybody in my family knows about it, you know.
Well, that's something you're never going to forget, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just wondering if that kind of sensitivity to the paranormal, if that, you know, is common, you know, that follows your family line.
Is it genetic, in other words? Well, yeah. I mean, how is it with you? Have you had paranormal experiences? Have you seen full-on apparitions?
I grew up in a very religious home, and I was always taught that if we had that experience where we see a spirit, that we're not supposed to engage it because it invites them in your life, and it's an evil presence. And I've had experiences, you know, when I was 14, 15 years old. You know, my parents are immigrants from South America, and in South America, there's a lot of people dabbling in different, you know, with different spirits. So my parents had, you know, people that were attacking them spiritually, and my house was always a place of conflict. When I was 14, I was in the living room, and I was talking to my sister, and then I look up, and I see my sister in my mom's bedroom stepping into the bathroom. And I knew it was her hair, it was long hair, she was wearing her clothes, and I said something to her, and she didn't reply. And then I was wondering why she wasn't replying, so I walked in expecting my sister to be standing there combing her hair or something, and the bathroom's completely empty. And then I turn around, and my sister, you know, turns the corner and walks into my mom's bedroom, like, "Hey, what's going on?" And, you know, that freaked me out, but I kind of, like, blocked it, and I didn't think about it again until years later.
So that was, her doppelganger, her astral body? What was happening there?
I don't know what it was, but I tried to block it out, and I did for years. And for some reason, I started thinking about that again. That was my experience. And then my wife is extremely sensitive to this sort of thing. My wife is half Chinese, and her grandmother escaped to communist China, and she would invite spirits in and have conversations with them, like normally, like every day. It was like, oh, you know, my friend this and this. And I guess right before her grandmother died, my wife's mother convinced her that these spirits were not anomalies. They were actually evil spirits.
All right, I've got to cut you loose, Adam. Apologies. Thank you for the call. Great stories, all of you, and thank you. I guess we can all just sleep well tonight by reminding ourselves this is just all particle entanglement. Quantum mechanics, folks. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Binall, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, welcome back. And here in Toronto, Scott Guest and Neil Kumar, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your voices, your beautiful voices. Good night.